An amendment to the Constitution is necessary because activist courts have left our nation with no other choice.
$85 million to the Canada Pension Plan is a drop in the bucket.
Well, isn't there something to be said about the fact that we all paid into it anyway? It's our money.
Absolutely.
I certainly hope it's entertaining, and I certainly hope it's an enjoyable 90 minutes. The message for me of the film is that we are all so afraid of one another.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Marriage equality draws fire from three federal governments, Canadian pension plan plaintiffs plead their case, and Peter Page produces a funny flick with prickly problems. All that and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 10, 2006. Government leaders on three continents were speaking out this week on the issue of marriage equality, and none had anything good to say about it. In Australia, the government of Prime Minister John Howard announced that it would attempt to overturn the recently enacted civil unions law in the Australian Capital Territory, or ACT. But before the week was up, the ACT legislature shortened the timetable for same-gender couples to take advantage of the new law by amending the Civil Unions Act to change from 1 month to 5 days the notice couples need to give before being civilly united. The first civil union could therefore be celebrated as early as June 15th. Australia's Attorney General Philip Ruddock this week said that his government will use its constitutional power to overturn the law, since it has oversight over territorial legislation. The federal government's position is that civil unions, giving same-gender couples all the rights of marriage, but just not calling them that, violates the country's Marriage Act. The Registrar General's Office for the ACT, which includes the capital city of Canberra, has warned couples that their civil unions may be voided. According to its website, anyone intending to enter into a civil union under the Civil Unions Act 2006 is advised that there is a risk attached to their decision given the current uncertainty with the legislation. Prime Minister John Howard denied his government was homophobic during comments this week on national radio. "We are not anti-homosexual people or gay and lesbian people. It is not a question of discriminating against them. It is a question of preserving as an institution in our society marriage as having a special character," he said.
Meanwhile, though it has no serious chance of passage, the U.S. Republican Party and its leaders trotted out the so-called Federal Marriage Amendment for another exercise in futility this week. Most commentators saw it as the GOP's attempt to feed political hay to its right-wing conservative base in an election year. A similar congressional debate in 2004 was thought to push conservative voters in almost a dozen states to the polls to approve anti-marriage equality ballot measures. President George W. Bush used his weekly Saturday radio address and remarks before a friendly conservative crowd 2 days later to urge passage of the amendment, sounding familiar themes.
"This national question requires a national solution, and on an issue of such profound importance, that solution should come from the people, not the courts. An amendment to the Constitution is necessary because activist courts have left our nation with no other choice."
Calling the president's remarks an immoral attack on gay Americans, Matt Foreman of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force said that using the activist courts and judges catchphrase is not only insulting to the foundation of our republic, but profoundly ironic, given that they come from a man who would not be president at all but for activist judges. Amending the U.S. Constitution requires a two-thirds vote in both houses of Congress and ratification by three-fourths of the states. A procedural Senate move for a formal tally got a 49-48 vote this week, but required 60 ayes, so there was no vote on the actual amendment there. But the Republican leadership isn't finished romancing its right-wing base. They've announced that they'll push the amendment in the House of Representatives next month. Voters in Alabama, by a 4-1 margin this week, approved a state constitutional amendment banning legal recognition of same-gender couples. 19 other U.S. states have approved similar measures.
Canada's new conservative leader, Stephen Harper, this week said his campaign promise to revisit the marriage equality issue in Parliament won't be realized for a few more months. The announcement comes on the heels of many conservative MPs saying they consider the matter settled, said a statement from Canadians for Marriage Equality, and we think Mr. Harper should move on. The group says the vote could be held sooner and rather quickly, but that Harper's delay is designed to give right-wing groups more time to lobby their MPs before a parliamentary vote to reconsider the issue is held. Few pundits believe there's a realistic chance for federal marriage equality legislation to be repealed in Canada, and some charge that Harper is only following the lead of Australia's Howard and the U.S.'s Bush by pandering to conservative voters.
The Vatican continued its now frequent attacks on gays and lesbians this week, calling same-gender marriage, abortion, and a host of other practices it sees as threats to the so-called traditional family, the eclipse of God. Its 60-page document, called Family and Human Procreation, said the family was under attack around the world, even in traditionally Christian cultures, by what it called radical currents proposing new family models. It listed these threats as giving same-gender couples legal recognition equal to married heterosexuals, lesbians the right to bear children through artificial insemination, and gays and lesbians the right to adopt children. The coalition of recently installed Italian Prime Minister Romano Prodi has promised some form of legal recognition for same-gender and unmarried heterosexual couples, but has stopped short of calling it marriage. Prodi reprimanded one of his ministers in late May for publicly discussing the matter, and two other ministers for talking about other Vatican-sensitive issues. "There's a need to get our heads down and speak only when a decision has been made," he said.
We've reached the peak of pride season around the world, and gays and lesbians in overwhelmingly Roman Catholic Poland won the right to stage pride parades in late May when the country's Supreme Administrative Court upheld a ruling against Poznan's mayor, who had banned last year's parade. Queers and their supporters marched in that western Polish city anyway and were pelted with eggs and stones. 75 pride marchers were arrested, but courts later refused to prosecute them. Defiant pride marchers in the southern city of Krakow faced similar egg and rock throwers earlier this year. Other Polish officials, including President Lech Kaczynski when he was mayor of Warsaw, also banned or attempted to ban pride parades. The court ruling applied nationwide, so current Warsaw officials had no choice but to allow several thousand LGBT people and their supporters to march for pride there on June 10th. Politicians and activists from several countries demonstrated international solidarity by taking part in the Equality Parade through the heart of the Polish capital. Unlike pride events elsewhere in Europe in recent weeks, the event was relatively peaceful, as some 2,000 police officers prevented about 100 egg-throwing skinheads from directly confronting the marchers as they gathered in a counter-demonstration at the start of the parade route.
51 protesters were arrested on June 3rd at the second annual Pride Parade in Bucharest, Romania, after they threw bottles, rocks, and eggs at the marchers. Police had to use tear gas to restrain the opponents, and 10 people were reportedly injured in the melee. More than 1,000 protesters, including nuns and priests carrying crosses, confronted the 500 marchers. Other opponents threw eggs from balconies along the parade route. Reminiscent of the previous week's event in Moscow that had a similar but more injurious outcome, several activists from across Europe also marched in solidarity with local Romanian activists who, carrying multicolored flags and singing patriotic songs, demanded legal protections from discrimination and marriage equality.
Gays and lesbians are under increasing attack in many parts of Eastern Europe. Last July, hundreds of police officers had to protect a few dozen rights demonstrators from an angry mob in the Latvian capital, Riga, and the mayor of Chișinău, Moldova, issued an outright ban on a pride event in his city last month. Zsolt Semjen, the leader of Hungary's Christian Democratic People's Party, used homophobic rhetoric to attract votes in that country's recent elections. "If you want your son to have his first sexual experiences with a bearded older man," he notoriously said, "you should vote for the liberals." And the openly gay Dutch ambassador to Estonia said this week that he was leaving his post because of the constant homophobic and racist harassment and threats his black Cuban-born partner had been subjected to on the streets of Tallinn.
But several hundred people staged the first ever pride parade in the Indian Ocean nation of Mauritius on May 20th. Reports say many onlookers were shocked by the demonstration in a busy shopping area, According to the Reuters news agency, drag queens led the parade wearing feather boas and high heels. The country's Attorney General, Rama Velayan, called the march a new page in the history of Mauritius, the page of freedom.
And finally, in the Northern California city of Los Altos, the downtown area was awash in rainbow-colored flags and balloons on June 4th in that city's controversial first-ever Pride Parade. An estimated 300 people walked the eight-block route, cheered on by a sparse but exuberant crowd of supporters lining the sidewalks and providing nonstop applause. The Los Altos Gay Straight Alliance, or GSA, organized the parade after the city council voted in February to ban proclamations regarding sexual orientation, and went on record as being opposed to a pride event. 16-year-old Los Altos GSA co-president Nicolette Bocalan said at the post-parade rally that there is a silent youth here that is afraid to be anything but silent. This parade is as much for giving them hope as it is for celebrating our own pride.
And that's News Wrap for the week ending June 10th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Greg Gordon. Is there something queer about a childless gay man who loves kids? An interesting new movie turns on that question, and you'll get a sneak preview later in the program. So you don't want to miss a week of This Way Out's global news reports, or being introduced to terrific new music by openly LGBT artists, or hearing about a new movie of significance even before the buzz begins, or being on scene to hear coverage of important news events as they happen. The answer is a subscription to This Way Out. You can have our programs on CD or audio cassette delivered each week right into your mailbox for much less than the cost of a newspaper subscription. For easy how-to information, just email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us for more information at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. Are the survivors in long-term gay and lesbian relationships entitled to the pensions that their partners paid for? That's the question in a case heard by the Supreme Court of Canada in mid-May. Legendary Toronto activist George Hislop began a crusade to win Canadian pension plan survivor benefits after his partner of 28 years, Ron Shearer, died in 1986. Hislop himself died last October at the age of 78, but the case continued in his name and those of four co-claimants. Hislop et al. V. Attorney General of Canada appears to be both a demand for basic fairness and a complex case involving sometimes technical legal issues, as the plaintiff's lead attorney Douglas Elliott explained recently during a conversation with This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching.
Just for people who don't know the whole story behind the case, perhaps I could get you to just fill us in really quickly the history of it.
Yes, well, the Canada Pension Plan has been around since 1966, and queer people have always paid equal premiums into the plan from the beginning. And from the beginning of the plan, there's always been a survivor's pension paid to those who are the survivors of conjugal relationships. However, it always excluded same-sex couples until the year 2000, when Parliament decided, after a series of losses in the courts, that they were going to have to extend rights to same-sex couples across the board. And with respect to the Canada Pension Plan, they included same-sex couples, but unlike other provisions they were amending, they put in a restriction and said that it would only apply to same-sex couples whose partners had died after January 1st, 1998, and that even for those who were being included, instead of starting the pensions 1 month after the date of death, which is the case for opposite-sex couples, it would start in August of 2000, which cut out many, many years of pensions for a lot of people. As a result of that, we started a class action. It was launched originally simultaneously in British Columbia and in Ontario. We were successful at trial. On appeal, the Ontario Court of Appeal upheld the entitlement of same-sex couples to pensions, but then also said that estates were not going to be able to collect the pensions. So as a result of that, federal government appealed to the Supreme Court of Canada saying that the same-sex couples should get nothing. Mm-hmm. And we appealed saying that the estates should be entitled to collect, and also that if the same-sex couples were entitled to pensions, they should get the same amount as opposite-sex couples. That is going back to 1 month following the date of death, and that was the appeal that was heard in the Supreme Court of Canada.
So just to clarify, heterosexual estates can collect the pension?
The estate problem only crops up if you don't apply for the pension while you're alive.
Oh, I see.
And the reality is that most heterosexuals do apply while they're alive. The rule says that if you haven't applied while you're alive and your estate doesn't apply within 1 year of the date of death, you get nothing. Well, that almost never happens with straight people because they normally apply while they're alive. Of course, in the case of our group, there's a very large number of people who knew that it was really pointless to try and apply because the law didn't actually grant a pension to them.
Gotcha. So how did the hearing go?
I thought it went extremely well. I mean, it's very difficult to predict, of course, because when the judges ask questions, sometimes they're playing devil's advocate and you just don't know what they really think. But I think it's fair to say that Justice Binney was extremely sympathetic to our position, as was Justice Abella and Justice LaBelle, and to a lesser extent, Chief Justice McLaughlin, just judging by the questions.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, Justice Rothstein was extremely hostile.
Hmm.
He was very concerned about how much money this was going to cost. He was totally preoccupied with the financial implications of this judgment. My colleague Sharon Matthews from Vancouver said that the cost was 1/1000th of 1%, which is what the evidence was, not from us, but from the government witness. And he said, well, yes, but how much is that in real dollars? And she said, well, it translates into about $80-85 million. And the Canada Pension Plan made $16 billion in interest last year.
Hmm.
So $85 million to the Canada Pension Plan is a drop in the bucket.
Hmm.
And Justice Bastarache, although he had a bit of a concern about the financial implications, he was more, I think, concerned about the general proposition that, you know, Parliament had fixed the law, and even if the fix that they had made in 2000 was imperfect and hadn't helped everyone, well, they fixed it, and shouldn't the courts just let them fix it the way they wanted to and not interfere?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that I'm not too optimistic that we will find Justice Rothstein and Justice Bastarache ruling in our favor, but that's only two out of seven judges, and all we need is four.
Well, isn't there something to be said about the fact that we all paid into it anyway? It's our money.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's the other issue, of course, is that even if it was going to cost money, as I said to Justice Rothstein, the question is, should someone like George Hislop have to die in poverty because it's going to cost money?
Mm-hmm.
Because if insignificant cost is enough to justify discrimination, well, you can imagine in future discrimination cases, the government will stand up every time and say, well, there's a cost here, and that's enough according to the Hislop case. Therefore, we're allowed to get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
There are people alive today who are living in very difficult financial circumstances because they're not getting the pension that their partner paid for.
Mm-hmm. So, Doug, did the court give any inclination or indication as to when they're going to rule on this?
No, they did not. They almost never do.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect that it will be at least 2 months and maybe as much as 6 months before they decide. I should say to any of your listeners who did have partners who contributed to the Canada Pension Plan who died before January 1st, 1998, please file your applications now, because if you're holding back, you may actually end up losing money, because we just don't know whether this one-year limit is going to be upheld by the Supreme Court of Canada. And so you're just hurting yourself if you don't get your application in right now.
That was Douglas Elliott, the plaintiff's lead attorney in a lawsuit now being considered by the Supreme Court of Canada demanding equal survivor pension rights for same-gender couples. With This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching in Vancouver asking the questions.
5678. Hi, this is Bill Condon. Recently wrote this screenplay for Chicago. Knowledge is power, so stay informed by listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
Woke up this morning at 11:11. Wasn't in Portland, and I wasn't in heaven.
Queer as Folk may be history, but one of its stars is back with a new film. It's called Say Uncle, and This Way Out's Steve Pride is an approving nephew.
Peter Page could have done almost anything after his 5 years on Queer as Folk. He chose to make his feature film directorial and writing debut with a dark comedy about the culture of hysteria and paranoia. The film has humor. There's even a romantic opportunity with a character played by funny man Anthony Clark. But for the most part, Say Uncle tackles a hard topic head-on. And it was inspired by something in Peter's own life.
I was living in Portland, Oregon. I was a godfather and sort of one of the primary caregivers to a 1-year-old. His family up and moved on me. And that day, the day they left, was one of the more difficult days of my life. I kept sort of joking through the tears that I was going to keep coming to the house and pretending the kid was asleep in the other room and the new tenants were babysitters. And that was that. I wasn't dealing with this. I was just pretending it wasn't happening. And I just started to riff on that. I started to wonder, what does someone who can't deal with grief do when they're faced with that kind of loss? And in my head, he gets himself in a lot of trouble.
In the film, the character Paul is desperate to replace the lost relationship with his godson and pursues opportunities that will bring him in contact with children, working in a toy store, babysitting, adoption. He also passes many hours playing with children at the local playground, but a lone gay man at a playground leads to accusations and neighborhood hysteria. As Peter said, trouble.
I certainly hope it's entertaining, and I certainly hope it's an enjoyable 90 minutes, and I feel, you know, we've really accomplished that, but the message for me of the film is that we are all so afraid of one another that it's reached a boiling point, and I just can't do it anymore. I just can't be afraid. You know, I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, there was the summer of the abduction, that they were counting all the child abductions on the news every night. And that summer, there were no more abductions than there were the year before that, or the year before that, or 100 years before that. But we were also afraid that, you know, kids weren't allowed outdoors. And I just think we are really damaging our own experience of the world.
I saw the cutest thing yesterday. Do you remember that guy from a few weeks ago? The one we saw at the other place? You know, the one...
The one we couldn't figure out which kid was his?
Yeah, that's him. So he is in the sandbox with Lindsay and Ashley.
Yeah.
And they're playing something. I don't know what.
Right.
And, so I go over to get Lindsay to take her home for her nap. And, this is so cute. He was trying to get Lindsay to call him Uncle Paul. Isn't that cute, Uncle Paul?
No, that's not cute. That's not cute. That's terrifying. He doesn't have any children.
What?
No kids. I asked him.
Well, who's he been bringing to the playground?
No one.
Then why is he there?
Think, Susan.
Oh, my God.
The brave thing about Say Uncle is that it delves into shades of gray. Kathy Najimy's character Maggie, who so fiercely campaigns against Peter Page's character Paul, never becomes a stereotype. She never is really the bad guy. Because, although it's innocent, there is something slightly creepy about Paul's behavior.
Exactly.
Actress Kathy Najimy.
And if there was a single person without a kid at the playground, and again, this has nothing to do with his sexuality. I don't care if he's gay, straight, tranny, bi, doesn't matter. Because we know what we know now about pedophiles and child molestation, we are hypersensitive and aware and fierce about protecting our children. I'm fierce about protecting my child. It's inappropriate to hang out in the playground with no kid and to play without asking the mother and saying who you are and can I play with your kid? Because you know what? I'd say no. God bless you and go off somewhere and do something else. Or to, at one point, a little boy goes into his apartment. Now, again, there's nothing sexual about this character. This character is not interested in kids sexually. We all know that the majority of pedophiles are heterosexual men. That aside, his behavior is inappropriate. And so that's what made it really great for me to play her, because I was never that far away from her point of view.
Paul's inappropriate. Yeah, he's not a bad guy. He's inappropriate. He doesn't have an ability to comprehend the social mores the way that you or I do. He actually has a psychological disorder, which is called cognitive dissonance, which you learn late in the film was caused by sort of a trauma early in his life. But while his behavior is odd and a little creepy, his motivations aren't. And while Maggie's impulse is certainly valid and really understandable and would be mine, quite frankly. Maggie is as much a part of me as Paul is. I think people often think because I played Paul that he is who I am in this movie, but I'm also Maggie in this movie. I also am afraid of everything. I also want to control everything. I also want to be heard and mix things up. I certainly, you know, I believe where Maggie comes from. I wouldn't start a citywide campaign because based on a hunch out of a sort of a need of my own to be seen and heard. But yeah, these are two flawed people on a collision course.
I thought Peter was really courageous in writing this because we've all seen a lot of gay films. And because of the rampant homophobia in this country, gay filmmakers tend to make films where the gay people are perfect. And it's in response. It's in defense of the homophobia because you don't want to feed the fire anymore of the misinformation of homophobic America. But he took this character and made him flawed. That's really risky.
According to Peter Page, being an openly gay actor is more difficult than being queer behind the camera. There are quite a few out gay writers and directors these days, but out actors are members of a really small club.
I had sort of hoped when I came out that the rules were just going to change, and they haven't. They've changed a little bit. There are some people who are really open to my coming in for roles that you wouldn't, that people wouldn't conventionally think of me for, and there are some people who aren't. You know, I know my agents face real challenges. I know, you know, during pilot season that they get as many, I don't think so's, as they do, sure, bring them in. So I think that could wear a person down. But it is sort of staggering to me that when you count up the number of openly gay people in this business, in front of the camera, that you get to about 15 and it's really hard to get anywhere else.
This has been a conversation with Peter Page and Kathy Najimy. Say Uncle is from TLA Releasing. More info can be found on the official website, sayunclefilm.com. And as always, you can find information on this and other queer movies at prideonscreen.com. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, Heather Kitching, and Steve Pride contributed program material. You heard music by Rufus Wainwright from the Say Uncle motion picture soundtrack, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to our website to see how you can help keep this program on the air. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KSUA Fairbanks, Alaska, WPKN Bridgeport, Connecticut, 2XX Canberra, Australian Capital Territory, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.